Blog Talk Radio.
All right, and even on Easter Sunday, it is.
Oh, I'm hearing myself twice. Let's try that again. And even on Easter Sunday, if it's a Sunday night, then it is Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Dailycast. Greg Parks has the night off, and so I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I'm one of the hosts of PWT Talks NXT here on the Dailycast lineup. I also write the NXT hits and misses, as well as the alternate perspective SmackDown recap alongside Wade Keller's own recap and his take on SmackDown each Friday night. So if you want to join the show, give us a call, 515-605-9345. Press 1 on your keypad and prompted to join the caller queue, and switchboard will light up and tell me you want to talk. You have something to say, and I'll bring you right on. You can also email us tonight at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com with any of your questions, comments on NXT TakeOver. I know it's not the typical Wrestling Night in America email address, but hey, that's the one I have access to. So last week, Greg and my PWT Talks NXT co-host Kelly Wells previewed the two-night WrestleMania card, and this week we're here to do the same thing on NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. So before we go any further, let me introduce my other co-host from PWT Talks NXT here with me tonight, an ardent Fatty Arbuckle fan, Tom Stout.
Yes, I was just getting through watching a couple of shorts. As a matter of fact, I am sitting, but I am ready to deliver. I am feeling, you know what, I've already done a couple of these preview shows, but for Wrestling Night in America, I'm feeling laid back and ready to just have an easy conversation and framed as a preview show. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the callers bring to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first, before we go to the phones, let's run down the card for each night of Stand and Deliver here. And then I think I get a couple questions. We'll kind of talk back and forth here with me and Tom, that we'll head to the phone lines after that. So night one of NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver will be streaming on Peacock and the USA Network. We have Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez for the NXT Women's Championship, Walter versus Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT UK Championship, MSK versus Grizzled Young Vets for the NXT Tag Team Championships. We also have the Gauntlet Eliminator match, which is going to be determining who will be facing Johnny Gargano for the North American title on night two. In this match, and entering the match in this particular order, will be Swerve, Leon Ruff, Bronson Reed, Cameron Grimes, Dexter Lumis, and LA Knight. So that rounds out night one of Stand and Deliver. Night two will be streaming on Peacock, and night two has Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross with Scarlett for the NXT Championship, Kyle O'Reilly versus Adam Cole in an unsanctioned match, Johnny Gargano versus the winner of the Gauntlet Eliminator of the from the night before for the North American Championship. We also have Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon versus The Way, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell for the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships. And we have Santos Escobar versus Jordan Devlin in a ladder match for the undisputed NXT Cruiserweight Championship. So, Tom, looking up and down the card each night, do you feel like NXT did kind of a good job in making each show feel equally important, or does one night have a stronger card than the other? And then assuming that Shirai and Gonzalez and Balor Cross close out each night respectively, as is listed on the card on WWE.com, which may or may not be the case, but let's just go under that assumption for a moment. Do you feel like, which one do you feel like is a stronger main event, and is there another match on the card that you might slot in and place in one of these two?
Yeah, I am suspecting that, I'm wondering if the quote-unquote co-main event of the unsanctioned Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly match will be an excuse to do what, if I remember correctly, they did with the Gargano Ciampa unsanctioned match, where Aleister Black versus whoever it was, Lars Sullivan or somebody, was the official main event. And then they were like, all right, and now, you know, the crowd can stay and you guys can do whatever you want, but this is not sanctioned. So they can get away with calling Balor Cross the actual main event, but then Cole and O'Reilly actually go on last. I wonder if they're going to do that. But yeah, it's a very fair question, but I think my my all too easy answer is looking up and down the card, I think they did do a pretty good job of not seeming like they were giving the short shrift to either knight. We found out recently that the first knight is actually, or at least I found out recently, I don't think it had been announced before, that the first knight is actually going to be simulcast on Peacock without commercial breaks. So that's an interesting choice. I was going, I mentioned that now because I was wondering, like, what are they giving to USA and what are they giving to Peacock? But it feels pretty even to me. I think you can't, even with Ciampa Walter on the card, you can't main event night one with anything other than Io and Raquel, which has a very good chance to be one of the standout matches of the whole shebang. And yeah, I guess I already covered the night two bit. But yeah, I think the only thing that really makes that you could argue night two is more significant because it's the blow off of these multiple qualifying things that people have had to go through to get to the North American Championship match. And because I know you just said it, but the ladder match is on night two, right?
Correct. Yep.
So you've got that gimmick as well, that they can hype that up on night one, like, ooh, there's a ladder involved, guys. So I think that's a little extra something as well, but it's pretty darn even.
Yeah, I honestly would agree. I was taking a look at this, you know, earlier today, kind of, you know, in preparation for this show here, and it does. I mean, everything really feels equal. Your Raquel and Shirai, that's a match that, I mean, I think that's probably my most anticipated match of the weekend, with maybe Escobar and Devlin kind of being there too, because I'm really interested to see what they do in a ladder match. Working together, see what their chemistry is. It's more of like an interesting, I guess, than excitement. But I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then obviously O'Reilly and Cole. That is going to be that should be interesting. I hate to use the word slobberknocker, but man, that's the word that came to mind, and I couldn't think of something else. So that's the one I'm going to stick with. But yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a pretty good analysis of night one and two there. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead. We're going to open up the phone lines here. We're going to go to the first caller of the night. I'm going to bring on area code 814. Go ahead, state your name and where are you calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, how are you doing tonight, man?
Good. First question's on Karrion Kross. Who do you see his first feud being with if he ever gets caught up to the WWE main roster? Because I'm sure Vince has his eye on for a call-up for him.
Yeah, that's something that I think even before his injury we were hearing about, him kind of being in Vince's crosshairs here to go up to the main roster. Tom, who just kind of get curious to see what your thoughts might be on who Karrion Kross might be, like his first feud, what might be when he makes it up to the main roster, what brand you might think he might wind up on?
That is a fantastic question. I think just having that question presented is confronting me with the fact that I've just sort of been viewing the Karrion Kross call-up as an opportunity to do a series of squash matches, which I could say about so many people that are being introduced to any roster, and unfortunately we so rarely see it. So trying to real quick think more realistically, I'm going to say The Miz. I don't even like it. It just seems realistic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be something silly like Elias too, which isn't even, that's an even worse pick, for entertainment value, but it feels like that's sort of the thing to do. If you don't get a series of squash matches, which is so rare, you get put with somebody like, this is the Dolph Ziggler spot, and Dolph is doing something else right now, that, you know, you get the obligatory 2 to 3 month feud with them. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I'm the whole reason I threw to you first, I'm like, I need a second to think about this. No, it's something like that wouldn't necessarily wouldn't necessarily bother me if they were to bring him up in kind of like a upper mid card type of a thing. But I think at the same time, I would honestly rather see him come in and just start feuding with some sort of a main eventer right off the gate. I mean, if they wanted to, and I mean, he's not necessarily a main eventer yet, although I think he might be able to get there, but they could also harken back to, the NXT feud between him and Damian Priest, because that was a short lived thing. I mean, it was sort of paid off, but, they could do that where he comes in and kind of does something with Damian Priest. But that was really the first thing that came to mind. But having him come in and then, where he's got kind of like that spooky type of an entrance, I could almost see him maybe wanting to do something with The Fiend if they put that much stock into him. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure where exactly they would slot him once he's in on the main roster. But like, just because of the entrance and the presentation of the character, I feel like they could at least make some really cool vignettes and things hyping a match between The Fiend and Karrion Kross, whether or not that would be his first feud on the main roster or not. I couldn't say. That it would all depend really, I think, on how strong they would make him look out of the gate, or they want to make him look right out of the gate. If they wanted to throw him right up there with somebody like The Fiend. But at least those are a few things that come to mind
as well, even Damian Priest specifically. So I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's at least that's what's coming to us off the top of our head. Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight?
Second question is on Logan Paul. Do you see a time frame of him ever debuting with WWE, or do you think he's just going to stick to his YouTube channel and boxing matches?
Did you say Logan Paul?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was just double-checking. I honestly have no idea. Logan Paul is somebody that I don't normally follow. So when I saw a couple weeks ago that Sami Zayn, talking to Logan Paul online, and he's potentially going to be showing up at WrestleMania, something like that, showing up on SmackDown and then potentially WrestleMania, it was kind of a scratch-my-head type of a moment, but... given the fact that he does have, a boxing and MMA, background and I guess passion for it, I wouldn't say it would be super far-fetched for him to want to try and do something with WWE. But as far as anything concrete, I haven't necessarily heard. Have you, Tom?
Certainly nothing concrete, and I kind of hate to admit how effective pairing Logan Paul with a heel is, especially an obnoxious heel like Sammy, that for as obnoxious as he is, we all still like him. I hate to admit how effective it is, because Logan Paul is a very hateable person. And this is, I know very, very little about this person, but the very, very little I do know is despicable. One of the things, of course, is that he gets involved in these boxing matches. So I have to imagine that he would be interested in doing something with the WWE, even if it's selfishly just to promote himself on another platform. But I mean, that segment with he and Sammy, I hated Sammy for kissing up to Logan Paul. And if it's the kind of thing where he doesn't rub anybody the wrong way backstage, and pals around or shakes the right hands or whatever, then yeah, I could absolutely see something. I wouldn't say like a regular stint, joining the roster or anything like that. If Ryan's question goes, that far, but I could definitely see like maybe a special pay-per-view match or something.
Almost like a Pat McAfee type of a deal, right?
Sure. Sure.
And
super compliment to Pat McAfee. That's a high bar. But we haven't even seen his match yet, but maybe like a Bad Bunny kind of thing. If Logan Paul got on the mic, and I know he did a little bit of talking already, but if he got on the mic and really cut a promo, it would just be, real heat from me the whole time. I mean, it's still within the realm of being effective. Like, I would love to see Kevin Owens super kick the guy. So that's money for WWE.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to that either. Absolutely would not be opposed. I seem to eat a stunner or something like that. Yeah, everything that I know about Logan Paul, which, you know, like you said, I mean, it is not a whole lot. It's not favorable for the most part. I almost questioned why they would want to involve themselves with somebody like him, but then I kind of thought a little bit more about it for about 5 seconds and went, oh, hey, yeah, we're talking about the WWE here. So, Ryan, anything else you have jumps out for you tonight?
I don't know if you know the answer to this question. For WrestleMania, did they have the concession apron, or do you think that's the off-limit COVID restrictions?
You know, I don't actually know. That's a good question. That's actually a really good question. Tom, do you have any idea?
Gosh, I actually did hear something about this, and I wish I remembered what it was. I believe that they are planning on having some kind of concessions available, but it's some sort of controlled, like only a certain number of people can be there at a time, and the booths are all spread out. And I'm just sort of like summarizing out of my ass right now because I really don't remember. But I for whatever little it's worth, I did hear something or read something about that they do want to have that available. So unless something's changed since I heard it, I believe that is going to be the case. And of course, with these sorts of things, what you worry about is less what we're going to see on screen in the open air and more what's going to be, you know, how cramped are people going to be in the bathrooms and you know, where are they going to be standing next to each other in line and things like that. So, yeah,
exactly.
But I think they still want that money.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense for them to want to be able to do some sort of concessions, not just for money, but if you think about it, you're going to have, you know, I mean, they want to have potentially, what, 25,000 people in the stadium for WrestleMania, and you expect 25,000 people to, you know, not have food. So in terms of COVID and everything like that, I can certainly understand, you know, closing it down and telling people to suck it up, but at the same time, you know, I know if I was at a show for that long, I'd start getting hungry. But that's just me.
All right, I remembered as you were talking, I was talking out of my ass because the whole like distancing thing. I mean, who knows? Maybe they will do something like that. That is not what I heard. What I did hear was that it will all be paperless. So like no receipts, no cash, just all debit or mobile transactions or whatever.
Now that you said that, I think I did hear the same thing. Being paperless. I don't know if it was on Wade's show or what, but I think I did hear the same thing now that you say that. There was a kind of an answer there. If we happen to find out anything else throughout the course of the night, if one of us gets a chance to do a little bit more Googling, we'll let you know. But otherwise, is there anything else you have for us tonight, Ryan?
I think that's all I had for you.
All right. Certainly appreciate the call. Appreciate it. And call it back in again.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
All right. Take care, Ryan. All right. So let's take a look here at night one of Stand and Deliver. So kind of I guess we're going to start at the bottom of the card here. I guess work our way up because why not? And also because if I start at the bottom of the card, at least as listed on WWE.com, we get to talk about Cameron Grimes. Unfortunately, that also means we get to talk about Dexter Lumis, but we also talk about the Gauntlet Eliminator. Tom, what do you think about this? And we talked a little bit about this on Wednesday, but how do you like the Gauntlet Eliminator and the basically this whole stipulation of the Battle Royal that they did, the Gauntlet Eliminator, and then finally that person facing Gargano on night two?
My knee-jerk reaction when it was all announced is that it seems like it's a whole lot, and what are they trying to cover up for? It feels like this is trying to paper over something that they don't want us to notice. But as we've seen it play out, I like how it has, as we always see with Battle Royals, it's helped further a couple of feuds, and it's helped highlight people like, you know, the winner of the Battle Royal, LA Knight, who needed a win after losing very clean to Bronson Reed, even though he looked good in the match. and is good at getting his heat back on promos. So while I don't expect him to get the win on both qualifying events, he at least got the one, and that's important. And then someone else can get the second one for that shine. So in the end, while it's something I don't want them to keep going back to a lot, I think it's a good format for right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's just something completely different. And I have to give them credit for, you know, at least trying something different. And I think it was effective. I know the first night, and you might have said this, but I got distracted from maybe the first sentence or two of what you were saying by my internet browser. I closed the switchboard and was like, oh, no. I thought I might have accidentally ended the show by doing that, but I didn't. So you might have said this, but I like the fact that they're trying something completely different. It was it did feel like it was a little bit convoluted at first, like when they first announced this whole thing, the battle royal and then the gauntlet and all this stuff. I was really kind of confused as to what was going on, and I know you were too, because we talked about it. I think it was 2 weeks ago on PWT Talks NXT, where I don't think you actually fully understood the stipulation until we were talking about it, and then you had to go back and look it up, if memory serves.
Yeah, it was silly. It was silly that I misunderstood it. I think the problem was that they were calling the Battle Royal the Gauntlet Eliminator Battle Royal, so I was thinking that it was one match, and so, they were promoting it for both, quote unquote, next week and the first night of TakeOver, and I'm like, wait, it's one match. When is this happening? And what I didn't realize is that it's two matches.
Yeah, no, then that makes sense. It was confusing me too, because I was expecting a gauntlet match with the people that were in the Battle Royal. I was expecting that to be a gauntlet match, and then I couldn't quite figure out what was happening the other night. And thankfully, I figured it out before we went on air. But it just did seem a little bit. It seemed a little bit convoluted, but once it was all explained, and then last week they came out and actually, I think it was Wade Barrett and Vic Joseph, if I'm not mistaken, came out and started talking about, or actually going through the rules and what was going to be happening in the Battle Royal and the Gauntlet Eliminator and all that. I certainly appreciated that, and I got on board a lot more at that point. So I definitely like it. In terms of who I think might end up coming out on top here, it's clearly going to be a face, because you're going up against Gargano here. I know Kelly wasn't high on this, and I don't know if you were either. I'm still putting my money on LA Knight. I don't think he's necessarily being portrayed as a complete heel yet. And that might be a far-fetched thing for me to say, because of the cockiness and everything that he has been portraying, but I don't feel like we've gotten a definitive moment where it's like, okay, he's a heel or he's a face. I feel like he could still lean either way. And I just feel like with the trajectory that he's been on since he's come into the company, I just got this hunch that LA Knight might be walking into night two against Gargano. Whether or not he wins is, I'm still not 100% sure, but that's at least my scenario. Did you give who you thought might come out on top of the Gauntlet Eliminator?
No, and your idea is interesting, just in that I do think putting him up against Gargano would be effective in getting people to cheer for him, because Gargano, for as talented as he is, and for as much as at the last TakeOver he basically threw away his character for the sake of getting however many stars he could in the match with Kushida, I think he's despicable enough as a character that I think that would go a long way for him. But you know, Mark on the Blake and Sal show talked me into Austin Theory being the most interesting option, because they even we recorded before NXT happened on Wednesday night, and they even did the finger poke of doom tease before Austin Theory didn't qualify. So I was like, man, it kind of would be interesting if we paid this off, this whole thing that's been going on between Theory and Gargano, with Gargano thinking he's getting a finger poke of doom situation, and then either confusion from Theory that he was like, wait, no, I thought that I was the one poking you, or Theory deciding in the moment, you know what? This is actually my opportunity. No, Johnny, I'm not going to do it. I am going to wrestle you. So I ended up being talked into that being the most interesting direction. But unfortunately, I still, man, like, I don't think Johnny's going to lose. So I don't think you want to go with Bronson Reed here, because if you're going with Bronson Reed, you want him to win in this situation. So I really just unfortunately think it's a Dexter Loomis thing. They've just been riding that storyline too long to not go with Loomis, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me at all if they did. And I don't necessarily want to see that, because it's like they're pushing him as this face, you know, and it just, everything about his character just screams heel. And the whole misunderstood thing or whatever. But I don't know. I'm not super high on that, but unfortunately it kind of does look like the most, probably the easiest way, you know, easiest way to get out of it. Or the best way to get out of it rather, considering, you know, the Loomis, angle versus the way for so long here. So, certainly I see where that goes, but yeah, Dexter Loomis is probably, probably the number one pick I get to win that. All right. So moving on to the NXT Tag Team Championship match, we've got MSK versus the Grizzled Young Vets. This is something that I am definitely looking forward to. I want to see a little bit more out of MSK because they're relatively new to the roster. As I've talked about on NXT, PWT Talks NXT, they were not a team that I was overly familiar with before they came into the company. And I've really been high on what they've done so far. I think they've been a great addition to the roster. And to see them in their kind of high-flying style against the just hard-hitting, brutal style of Grizzly Young Vets, I'm really intrigued by this. How do you feel about it, Tom?
This is, if any match on the card is, this is the match where they can get away with being just like a high work rate, spot-festy kind of match. Maybe not, I'll give them more credit than to say spot-festy, but at least the focus will be on the work rate, and this match will get away with it. So it's pretty simple without much story going into it. It's still bizarre that they stripped the title from Birch and Lorcan rather than replacing Birch in the match. But I still feel like this is MSK's to lose. It's Grizzled Young Veterans definitely have a chance. If I was picking a favorite, it would be Legado del Fantasma, but unfortunately they're just the other team in there. I don't think they have a chance at all.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm a little bit torn because I'm not sure who I think is necessarily going to come out here. I think I'm leaning towards Grizzled Young Vets for a couple reasons. They were the team that we thought was going to be the tag team champions a little over a year ago before COVID hit. So kind of feel like this is almost a rain check, if you will. On that tag team championship run. But, you know, not only that, their overall, like, I would love to see a heel tag team win the tag titles and kind of almost do what Escobar did for the cruiserweight title. A little bit less so in recent months here, but really elevated that title for a while. And I'd like to see you. I feel like the Grizzly Young Vets, they're the type of team they could come in. They could, you know, win those belts. And they are a serious enough team, and they feel like a serious enough threat where they could actually, you know, have a lengthy run with those titles, or at least lengthy by today's standards anyway, a lengthy run with those titles and look pretty dominant holding them. So that's at least my hope for it. Then at the same time, MSK being the newer team and they have had some focus put on them, you know, it's like, do they necessarily want to have this new team lose right off, you know, lose this big match right off the bat, or have them win, and put a little bit more shine on them. But I think if I was putting money on it, I think it would be the Grizzled Young Vets for me here.
And I like that idea because giving GYV a lengthy run sounds very appealing, and you've immediately got the story coming out of it. You could even have them pin, you know, the triple threat format. You have them pin DJZ or Joaquin Wilde. Joaquin Wilde or Raul Mendoza. So then MSK didn't even really lose, and they can still say that they are the Dusty Cup winners. So then you have a chase coming right out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I want to make a bit of a correction on when I was running down the card here. I did not write down that this was a triple threat match and Legado del Fantasma was in it. I knew it in the back of my head and I didn't write it down. So I've been talking about MSK and Girls of the Young Vets, but yeah, Legado is certainly involved here too. But regardless, I still think this is GYV's to win. All right, so moving on to the NXT UK Championship match between Walter and Tommaso Ciampa. This is another one I'm really looking forward to. Like I keep saying, like, Raquel and Io is the one that I'm probably looking forward to the most. And then as we're going through the card, I'm like, but there's this. I'm actually looking forward to this card overall. For probably the first time in a while, I'm looking forward to a takeover as much as I am right now. But Walter versus Tommaso Ciampa for the the UK Championship. This is something we talked a little bit about this on PWT Talks NXT on Wednesday, but the idea of Walter defending the UK title over here and Tommaso Ciampa beating him on U.S. soil for the UK title is so appealing to me. I don't think there is a chance in hell that they would actually do that. But especially given Walter's incredibly lengthy and dominant reign with that title. But there's something just so appealing about Tommaso Ciampa because he made that promo the other day. He was talking about how people have said, you know, he's not the 2018 Tommaso Ciampa that he was when he was the NXT champion. He doesn't have that edge about him anymore, however he worded it. Which kind of planted that seed in my head that maybe he might actually pull this out and somebody might finally beat Walter. And I started thinking about it and, like, you know, he can go over there, have some matches with them. You know, I think those are is the NXT UK still taped, or they're not doing those live? They're taped. They're definitely taped.
Yeah, they're still taped.
Yeah. So, you know, you go over there, do a handful of tapings and whatnot. You defend it. He doesn't necessarily have to be a lengthy champion. We were kind of talking about logistics and things like that. Obviously, COVID could throw a wrench in that too if travel gets shut down again. But I don't know. I'm rooting for it, but then at the same time I'm not, because I don't want to see Walter lose the title. I still obviously want to see him have a lengthy title reign. But Tommaso Ciampa's my guy. So yeah, what do you think about this one, Tom?
Yeah, I think just the fact that we're talking about how intriguing it would be for Ciampa to win this, even for a short little reign, to how well they've done with a very, very brief build that doesn't even really feel like Ciampa is the end game. And maybe Ciampa will continue to be the hero in the story, depending on what they do with Timothy Thatcher. But that's really what the intrigue is for me. We know this will be a knockdown drag-out match. I hope it is. There is the off chance that Ciampa does the favors the way he did to Karrion Kross, and it's just a few minutes long. But I think that both of these guys in big matches they strive to put on something special in a big spot, and they almost always deliver. Walter right now, I think, you know, well, whatever. They both have a very good track record of this and making themselves must see on big shows. So very good chance that this could be the match of both nights, the best one. But I think that Ciampa, while certainly not having no chance, has very, very little chance. And that intrigue does lie in, like, whose corner is Thatcher really in? And are we going to get, for as straight as they usually play it on TakeOver, this is still night one, simulcast on USA Peacock and WWE Network internationally and various partners as that's how Triple H put it in his mouthful when he was trying to cover everything. But yeah, still with the component of being live on USA for a takeover. So do they have something play into the finish here that is storyline forwarding in that regard?
I would definitely like to see that. And actually, while I was talking, I kind of forgot about Thatcher. He's been off TV for a while, but yeah, he is definitely part of the underlying story here. And whether or not he plays part in the finish here is definitely a good question. I'd like to see some sort of involvement from him. Let's say Ciampa loses, right, and Walter retains. You still have some sort of Timothy Thatcher involvement and kind of leaves us wondering, okay, is he going to side with his old ring comp buddies? Is he going to side, with his new tag team partner? And that could certainly make for some interesting story leading up to the next takeover too. So, definitely be on board with something like that. This should be one heck of a match, super brutal, hard hitting, Definitely looking forward to that one. All right. And then lastly, on night one, we have Io Shirai versus Raquel Gonzalez for the NXT Women's Championship, not the UK Championship, Women's Championship. So this match has been kind of brewing for quite some time now with Io Shirai. It was like a 4 or 5 segment attack on Raquel Gonzalez last week. Not a continued attack, but 4 or 5 different segments where she would either attack her backstage or attack her out in the ring after that is right after the main event, if I'm not mistaken. So this is a really intriguing match for me. Io Shirai, she's always going to go out there and put on her best anyway, but she always does, especially for a takeover. And I feel like with somebody like Raquel Gonzalez, who is still, I don't want to say green because she's not, but I guess still a, you're more of an apprentice than a master, if you will. I feel like Io Shirai is going to be able to give her a great match, make her look like a very, very dominant challenger. And I feel like there's even a possibility for Raquel to come out of this match with Io Shirai's NXT Women's Championship around her waist. I think personally, my money is on Io to retain, but with how dominant Raquel has been booked over the past handful of months, I mean, heck, even starting to be the more dominant more prominent person in her tag team with Dakota Kai, it is a little bit curious to see, and it kind of does plant those seeds that, she could potentially dethrone Io. What do you think about the women's championship match for TakeOver?
I will be annoying and remind that Dunn versus Kushida did also get added. I don't know how they're squeezing it all into a 2-hour show that also has a gauntlet match on it. I'm worried that we might see some quick falls in the gauntlet match,
I'm glad you were that guy, because I totally did not see it on the WWE.com preview, because there's no, every other match has a bold title in front of it and that one doesn't. So I didn't write it down, but yes, we do have that one. We'll talk about it after.
That's curious. I wonder if there will be a 1-hour long pre-show before each night. I wonder if that is going to end up on the pre-show, along with, with night two then being the women's tag. Well, anyway, I'm not sure what there really is to say about it. It's a feud that we've been expecting, should be a good, it's one of those matches where it's like, you can just close your eyes and visualize what it's going to look like. And when we see it, it'll be like, yep, that was good, but it's also what I expected. And Dunn will probably win. And we'll feel sad for the directionless Kushida. But yeah, boy, the quibbles, though, I may have with exactly how they did what they did for the go-home show between Raquel and Io. I've really just appreciated the matter-of-factness in Io. You've heard me say it a number of times. I like how she... For as awkward as it can be when the champion challenges the challenger, Io gets away with it because she really is having kind of a like a sleeper, really good women's title reign. I feel like when you think about Wednesday nights, you don't think about her first. But when she's out there doing her thing, it's like, oh, yeah, she's actually really on a hot streak right now, even though she's not as vocal as maybe she should be. So I like that she's just going up to people that she hasn't beat one-on-one yet, like Raquel, and just going like, yep, you next. That's what I want. Let's go. And Raquel, I think her progress has accelerated over the past number of months. I think she's probably at where Rhea Ripley was at in the second Mae Young Classic when she, at the drop of a hat, had to go up against Io Shirai, and the two of them put on a pretty darn good 13-minute-long match. So I'm confident that this is going to be really good. It is a bit of a proving ground for Raquel for the reasons you say, but I trust in her to prove herself. And it's almost a coin flip. And it depends on what they want to do. I feel like so much of this depends on where they want to put Taya Valkyrie and where they want to put Saray on the card when they come in. Are they going to be title challengers quickly? Because Io needs new title challengers. She's gone through a lot really quick, even though she had quite a lot. Like, they're going to have to reheat somebody up if she wins here. But, of course, if Raquel wins, then she's got a whole new crop. So, I think money's on Raquel here.
Okay. All right. So a little differing opinion, but that's okay. That's okay. Because I'm pretty much right there with you. I feel like it's a 50-50, and I'm leaning a little bit more towards the O, but you make a compelling argument too. So I can't really fault you for that either. So I think this really could go either way. There is definitely a part of me that would love to see Raquel get this and be a, be like you said, kind of like a Rhea Ripley-esque type of a character, which I guess in a way she kind of is, but, and have like a dominant run with it, similar to EO has too. So, we'll see where that leads us. But, I guess you did touch on Pete Dunne Kushida. I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to add to that myself either. I think it's going to be a great match, but there's not a whole heck of a lot in terms of like story and things like that going into it. A little bit, but there's not really a whole heck of a lot that I have to talk about it either myself. So let me double check. Okay, phone lines are good. Let's go to night two, which will be streaming on Peacock. So I guess we'll start again at the bottom of the card, at least as listed on WWE.com, which the bottom match here is for the undisputed NXT Cruiserweight Championship, Santos Escobar versus Jordan Devlin in a ladder match. This is certainly one, I think this might be my second, after we talked about Walter and Tommaso Ciampa, I think this actually may be my third most anticipated match on the card. But if not, it's tied for second. Not just because of the ladder match. We haven't really seen many ladder matches in NXT and WWE. Sure, we see them all the time. But, at least once a year. But twice a year, I guess, TLC and then Money in the Bank. But with this, it's interesting. We talked about it, too. It's like, I don't know why I didn't think at first that this might be a ladder match, and why it took Shawn Michaels coming out and pulling a ladder out from under the ring to make me realize, hey, you know, this makes perfect sense for a ladder match. You hang both titles above the ring. Whoever grabs them both is the champ. I don't know why that didn't come to me sooner, but it certainly makes sense. I feel like these two guys, are going to be able to go out there. They've got a great ring style, in-ring style. I feel like this is going to be, you were talking about MSK, Grizzly Young Vets, and Legado being the, quote, spot fest match of the night. And I feel like that's why these two matches are on different nights, because I feel like this is probably going to be that match of the night here. Ladder matches, I guess, by nature are usually, high flying kind of spot fest. Anyway, as far as who is going to come out on top here, I'm almost still kind of leaning for some sort of a non-finish. The way that they're setting it up makes it feel like there's going to be a finish. And we're going to have a definitive undisputed NXT Cruiserweight champion, but there's still something in the back of my head that says Escobar has unfinished business as Cruiserweight champion, even though he's more or less gone through everybody, in terms of the card here. But I've loved his run so much. I feel like he has been a relatively dominant champion that I don't want to see him lose it. But at the same time, I feel like Jordan Devlin, he's got the claim to it. He never lost the title. I will admit I'm a little bit behind on NXT UK, but from what I've been reading and, you know, from like what Darrell has been talking about, when he calls into the show with Jordan Devlin, it seems like he's got a pretty good thing going over in the UK. So I could see them wanting to kind of keep that going as well, which kind of leads me to think that maybe there'll be some sort of a dirty finish here where, you know, maybe they climb up and they grab, each one of them grabs a belt and we still have two champions or something along those lines. What are your thoughts about this match?
I think you just about nailed it with what kind of match we're going to see. And yes, they are. There's no way for me to talk about the match, unfortunately, without just saying that I don't really, Jordan Devlin is not similar to, he's in the same bucket with Velveteen Dream as somebody that I just don't want to see on my television.
Yep.
So that does influence the way that I'm looking at this. They do have that precedent of, you know, the option of hanging two belts, and maybe each guy comes down with one of them and you're like, oh wait, what do we do now? And then we go from there. Maybe one of them gets rebranded on one of the shows. But man, I feel like I've kind of given, even though the framing is always unfortunately the same, I feel like I've given a different answer for this on every time I've talked about it, but I'm kind of to a point now where I'm thinking, just let Devlin win, because they're clearly not taking him off TV. Send him back to the UK with his old belt, and look at the success that Escobar's title reign has been. And that, like you said, there's not really too much else, even though it feels like, I mean, while there may be a desire for him to have unfinished business with the Cruiserweight division, I mean, the belt, this run he's had has done an excellent job of elevating him, making him an integral part of the NXT show. And he feels like he has a much higher ceiling than being capped in a weight class. So just shed that weight class and go do other things. I think that might be the best win-win coming out of this.
You know, you might have even talked me into that, because it's, you know, I started to think about it and it's like, you know, even after I said it, the more I started thinking about the fact that, you know, he's kind of already gone through just about every challenger for, he being Escobar, he's already really gone through, just about every challenger, at least that I can think of, be compelling anyway. I guess it would kind of make sense. I mean, he's definitely been somebody that you want to see on TV every week. You know, he's kind of like him and Cameron Grimes. I want to see Escobar and Cameron Grimes every week. I could certainly see that, you know, and kind of have him moving on to, whether it be the North American title or something along those lines, wouldn't be a bad thing. Or even if he was just for a little while, almost put Mendoza and Wild a little bit more in the spotlight, have him act as a bit of a heater for them, let them kind of get shined up a bit in the tag team division. And then once they're a little bit shined up, he comes back and, starts challenging for the NXT title or the North American title. That's something that as it literally came to me as I was talking, but I wouldn't be opposed to that either. It'd be a little bit of a slide down the card.
That was
for a bit, but
that was an effective framing with that Kelly and I are seeing on 8 years back right now with the Wyatt family, where Harper and Rowan are doing most of the dirty work in the ring, most of it, not all. But Bray usually just sits back in his rocking chair. He's the big boss that you have to go through his goons to get through. And I think that would work really well for Santos.
Oh, by far, especially that, like the drug lord type gimmick there. So definitely would be on board with that. All right. So from going from the NXT Cruiserweight Championship match to the NXT Women's Champion Tag Team Championships. We've got Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon defending their newly won titles against The Way's Candice LeRae and Indi Hartwell. I'm almost in the camp of The Way here, just because I can't believe how annoying Shotzi and Ember have been as of late. It's been bad. It's been really bad how annoying they've been. As far as their in-ring work goes, and then that's kind of where I like to look at at least Shotzi and Ember here. The in-ring work, I mean, I feel like is definitely improved. Like we're talking about Ember being still a little bit ring rusty, I guess, since her return. I feel like the two of them being the face of the tag team division, that certainly works. Especially where they've been kind of pushing Shotzi and Ember for a little bit now, as not just as a tag team, but kind of as something within the women's division. I could definitely see them retaining. I don't necessarily see Candice and Indi winning, and I don't know if I'd want to either, because we've talked about this before, the NXT titles, especially the NXT women's title, not necessarily the tag title, but the NXT women's title is one of the most protected titles, if not the most protected title in the company. We don't see a lot of hot potatoing with these titles in NXT, and where this title just got introduced, we were on our second set of champions on the very first night it was introduced. I just don't want to see another name in the list of champions so soon for this particular title. I feel like it would kind of define it down. And that's not something that I really feel like you want to do right off the bat with the new belt, especially in the women's tag division, which is pretty much a burden, emerging division within NXT. So I think my money here is on Shotzi and Ember retaining for that reason. But I think this should be, I mean, it should definitely be a fun match, should be an interesting match to watch. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be on the level of like Io and Raquel either. So what do you think about Io? Sorry, not Io. That's Io and Raquel. That's the other night we're talking about Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, and The Way.
So I think they will eventually put this belt on Candice so they can then forever refer to her as having been a champion in NXT. But that time really isn't now, because especially after what they did with the flip flop on the night that it was introduced that you're talking about, I think that they want Ember and Shotzi to continue racking up defenses of this, despite how, yes, very, very annoying they have been together. And I feel like it might, like one of the reasons, as we've discussed elsewhere, that I think Johnny is a shoe, like the easiest pick of the whole takeover to win his match, is because they've already planted seeds of Candice being, I don't know if jealous is the word, but certainly observing that he values the title more than him. And maybe her losing an opportunity at a title is another way to start building toward the next chapter of that, because that's been happening enough that it's definitely not just something extra we're noticing. It's definitely a storyline that they have planned, and maybe my radar's off. Maybe the next chapter of that doesn't kick off until Johnny loses the North American Championship. And I mean, now I'm going off the deep end and saying, you know, maybe Candice does have a championship of some kind, and the dynamic flips and Johnny can't handle it. And that's when Candice unleashes. It's a possibility, but I think it's a real outside possibility for this juncture. This ultimately, I think, is a pretty easy pick for the baby faces. Yes.
Yeah. No, I agree with what you're saying. I think that eventually they will they probably will put this title on her. So like you said, they can say she was a champion. I would love to see her get an NXT women's title run, but I don't see that happening at the same time. I think that's a good call. You know, give her, I feel like, you know, She's more than earned a championship in NXT. But you know, give her the NXT Women's Tag Team title, have her halfway decent reign with it, whether it be with Indy Hartwell or somebody else. But have her have a halfway decent reign with it, and you know, that way, yeah, you kind of harken back to that. Call her a former champion. You know, whether she does go up to the main roster or you know they. I guess this kind of harkens back to one of the questions we got a few weeks ago, if they were ever going to do an NXT Hall of Fame, but you know, maybe eventually they do and she winds up in it. But yeah, we'll see, kind of see where that goes. But I think we're right. This should be a pretty easy win for the babyfaces here. Okay, then we have Johnny Gargano versus the winner of the Gauntlet Eliminator. So I guess this kind of ties into – well, not kind of. It definitely ties into the Gauntlet Eliminator from the night before. So you know, we were kind of thinking that this might be a Dexter Lumis win. I know I was kind of toying around with it being a potential LA Knight win for the Gauntlet Eliminator. Let's kind of go under the assumption, I guess, that Dexter Lumis or LA Knight is one of – you know, is the winner here. How would you feel about you know, one of those two going up against Gargano? What do you think would be the outcome, or do you think I'm completely off and it's somebody else?
It's definitely not Swerve or Ruff, because of course they're just there to further their own feud, which, you know, nice to see Swerve in particular make it to an actual takeover card and not the pre-show. I think maybe, no, he went up against Escobar at another takeover, but he worked a pre-show on the takeover that had a crowd, and that's the main one that sticks out. But yeah, it's nice to see him get that spot, since I felt there was an opportunity to have Dunn and Kushida go on to the Gauntlet and then tussle with each other in the Gauntlet to milk that for more TV. But they did what they did, and they're putting it on TakeOver Night 1, maybe the pre-show. And so with that being the case, like, even kind of looking back at the Battle Royal, I was like, oh, yeah, I was even thinking if they did that there, then the next guys who should make it in are probably Swerve and Ruff, and that's what they did. So I'm pleased with that. But, yeah, I mean, nothing new, unfortunately. Lumis doesn't excite me. If Gargano can't get a decent match out of him, then – I mean, why are we still even trying with Lumis at this point? I don't know why they are. But I think that's where it's going to go, and it's not going to be the best thing on the card. You know, in the fantasy world where it's LA Knight, boy, I just kind of – I'm torn between wanting to see him succeed in a kayfabe sense and also my perception of his character thus far – that he talks a big game, and he has Wade Barrett on commentary talking him up as well, but that he's going to have trouble backing it up, and that's part of the character, that he talks bigger than he can perform by design. We'll see how that bears out, but unfortunately I'm still expecting to have to sit through a Gargano-Lumis match.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably going to be the case. Who do you think is going to be the winner here? You think Gargano is going to retain, or we might actually see Lumis with a belt around his waist?
Yeah, easiest pick of the whole two nights to have Gargano go over here for reasons earlier stated. Of course, every time I say something like that, I'm like, oh, well, this is the one I'll be wrong about then. But no, this is a very easy Gargano retention.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think there's enough. Even if this was, you know, somebody else, it wasn't Gargano in the spot that was holding the title, going up against Lumis, you know, as challenger. I just don't think there's enough. Lumis doesn't have enough to actually be a champion. There's not enough there for his character. You know, depth. That's the word I'm looking for. There's not enough depth there. For him to be a credible champion. He's just, yeah, he doesn't talk. He just stands there. He's, his storylines have kind of been confusing and convoluted. And I think this is definitely an easy win here for Gargano for sure. Okay. So let's actually go, I'm going to skip the unsanctioned match. We'll talk about that last, because I like the idea of throwing that on last and say, okay, you guys have seen the main event and now you can stick around, but this isn't part of the show. So we'll talk about the unsanctioned match after. So this the next one will be Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross for the NXT Championship. This is one they've been building up for a handful of weeks now, maybe a month or two. I am still putting my money, I think, on Balor to retain here. As Ryan said earlier when he called in, Karrion Kross kind of seems like he's probably main roster bound. Again, kind of speculation, but given the fact that we know that they did want him up on the main roster pretty shortly after his debut, I can this really feels like a main roster gimmick rather than an NXT gimmick. I could certainly see him going up sooner rather than later, which, you know, is kind of why I'm thinking that we're going to see a retention from Balor here. But there's also that other side of the coin where, you know, Karrion Kross, he's only been in NXT really for, you know, a hot minute here because he was out for a while with an injury. And I feel like that injury did kind of define him down. You don't want to see some guy that's, you know, supposed to be a killer Kross here, Karrion Kross, kind of be a mortal. Even just the visual of him coming out to when he did win the NXT championship and he had to vacate it the next night, the visual of him coming out in a sling and, you know, with his arm kind of all banged up, that at least for me kind of took a little bit of the shine and the mystique out of that character and kind of it humanized him. So I don't know if, you know, they would want to keep him in NXT, give him an NXT championship reign so they could bring up the main roster and call him a former NXT champion, or if they just kind of want to bypass all of that, Finn Balor retains, and, you know, Karrion Kross, whether or not he sticks around NXT is to be seen, but I think eventually is going to be going up the main roster. So, Tom, what do you think about everything that just came out of my face?
And, you know, thankfully on that night that he had to relinquish, he at least cut a really good promo. And
that's true.
Coming out of that, yeah, and coming out of that promo, and which I can never remember the exact words, but it was something along the lines of, like, this is still my title. Someone else is going to be holding it for a while, but this is still mine, and I'm coming back for it. And on the strength of that and those exact words and the strength of how he had been presented to that point, and being hot-shotted, or not hot-shotted, but, like, you know, accelerated, you know, rocket-strapped, there we go, right to the top title over Keith Lee, preemptive though Keith Lee's call-up was, and his title reign, but that's a whole other subject. I think we've gone from thinking, yeah, of course, Kross is going to come back and make good on his promise to just take that title back. We've gone over the past couple of months to pretty unanimously feeling like Balor is going to win this to further legitimize his reign and maybe end this phase of Karrion Kross's push. I don't know exactly where he slots in on the NXT roster from here, maybe just in personal feuds like he has been for a little while, which has been kind of weird. It's been like he's been in a bit of a purgatory since returning, feuding with Priest and Escobar. But feuding with Priest and Escobar before going straight back to the title, just so we could have the lame little excuse of, like, oh, well, I waited this long because I didn't want anybody to interfere on the outside, so I needed to make sure that you were done with the Undisputed Era or whatever. You know, that all of that felt like a vote of no confidence from NXT. It felt like they were like, all right, well, yeah, we're going to bring you back because, you know, you're one of our drawing acts, or at least we're trying to draw with you. But after what happened, you know, we're not sure. And after what we saw in the ring from you, we're not so sure anymore. And I do think the main roster is the better place for him. Especially because his ring work has shown holes, and it is sort of that weird, you wouldn't think it would be this way, but people say, well, he's not ready for the main roster because of his ring work. And well, NXT is actually the show where your ring work is more important. The audience, the target audience for NXT values that, more up on the main roster. It's not as important. You just don't want to go around injuring people, and unfortunately there's a bit of a track record there now as well. Yes, the first time it was himself. Yes, the second time it was a spot that is difficult to control, so, you know, reportedly people aren't blaming him. I get all of that. I'm not even sitting here blaming him too much, but it is kind of like a Seth Rollins thing where, you know, you throw Sting into the turnbuckle and basically end his career for a while until somebody wants to pay him to do cinematic matches and wield a baseball bat. You know, it's like, well, a little bit of a track record, I wonder. And then Seth had to work to move away from that reputation.
Yes, he did. I could definitely see that kind of being a thing for him. So, all right, then let us move on here. We're going to talk about the unsanctioned match between Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. I don't think this is going to be a blow off. I think this is just the beginning of the feud with between these guys. Excuse me, one second. I think this is just the beginning of the feud with these guys. They have, you know, we were talking about this. We've talked about this quite a few times at this point on PWT Talks NXT, but I don't feel like this particular feud, this breakup of the Undisputed Era, has been nearly as effective as I would have hoped it would have been once we got here. I don't think it's bad. I'm not saying that. I think it's still compelling TV and it's still entertaining TV. It just doesn't seem to me as important as I feel like it should. I can't quite put my finger on why, but that's at least, you know, kind of my perception here. Adam Cole, I feel like he's kind of come off a little bit. Definitely came off, like we were talking about, we even gave him the nickname Crybaby Cole. You know, he was kind of coming off a little bit like whiny and crying and stuff like that. I did not really like that for him at all. I feel like that was exactly the opposite of what I would have liked to see out of him. Granted, it was for an angle, so you could just basically low blow Kyle O'Reilly and get his heat that way. But I just feel like it could have been done so much better than that. Regardless, I still think that this is going to be a fantastic match. With the unsanctioned format, it kind of has me wondering what they're going to do with it. You know, there's still a potential that they might do some sort of a cinematic match. There's potential that, you know, we see them fight all over, all over the parking lot and kind of, you know, outside and all through the back of the CWC. So, this match is definitely intriguing for me. And I think that it is going to, like I said, I think this is kind of going to be a launching point for the Undisputed Era feud continuing, or the breakup of the Undisputed Era feud continuing, between, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. As far as who's going to come out on top here, I can kind of make a case for either one. I feel like let me back up here. I could make a case for either one, but I feel like Kyle O'Reilly is the one that kind of needs this win. The last few times he's been in the ring, with Balor, for example, for the NXT title, he has come up short. So I feel like if they want to push him as a babyface that we can get behind, especially against somebody like Adam Cole, who even as a heel still has a majority of fans probably in his corner, or at least they like him. You know, if they might be booing him, but booing him for fun, they're still going to like him and what he does. And his entrance is, you know, proof of that. I don't feel like Kyle O'Reilly is quite to that level. So I feel like he could definitely use a win, whether it be, it doesn't have to be a strong one, but still use a win over Adam Cole here to kind of keep him credible. If not, and he doesn't win this, or doesn't come out of this looking strong, I kind of wondering where that leaves this whole angle. What are your thoughts, Tom?
I like how you said this could be a launching point for the continuation of the Undisputed Era feud, because the build to this point has been extremely lackluster. It feels like for all the times that we or semi-predicted, said that it's possible that, you know, this could be the point that they break up, this could be the point that they break up. And the reason we were saying that is because the narrative seemed to be, it would make sense. There, we saw where the pieces could fit, where it would make sense. They did it at a point that was not predicted. We didn't predict it, and it really ended up just feeling like they played a card that was in their hand for the sake of playing it, almost as a counter-programming tactic, like, man, we need something. AEW is doing this and this and this on Wednesday night, so we got it. Let's just do the pull the trigger, Undisputed Era breakup now. But this match absolutely does have the potential, especially with the two guys involved, to rise above a lackluster build, and it needs to be ugly. This needs to be an ugly match where these two just go at it and make me forget in the moment that neither of them have come off very well in the build, and none of, not a single week of television has been very interesting from either of their sides, and really generate the sympathy for O'Reilly and generate the heat on Cole. And yeah, there's definitely potential to make this first chapter a forgotten one if they can rise to the occasion, and you know, what other guys would you rather ask to do that than these two in this situation? So it's promising. While, you know, if I had to pick what's going to be match of takeover, it's, I would say Ciampa Walter. This is definitely up there in contention for that. Again, it's got to be ugly. It has to be hideous. I hope that they really go there. That doesn't mean like raking razor blades across their foreheads, but they just need to be mean with each other. And as far as who's going to win, yeah, I mean, I want to say Cole, because that's what you do in the first match of what is going to be a two or probably three match long feud at least. But man, O'Reilly really needs the win after several high profile losses. So I feel like the better choice would be to give it to him here and then figure out, they'll have something creative. I mean, hopefully it'll be creative and we're not just rolling our eyes at it after the fact, but something else to perpetuate the feud after the babyface has essentially conquered.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Pretty much with just about everything you said there, this is definitely going to be some sort of an ugly, ugly match. It should. It definitely should be. With the weight of the feud, it has to be. Where it's been such a lackluster build so far. I mean, in order to really hook us in, it's got to be something like that. Now, we're still technically in the COVID era. Do you think that there is a possibility that we actually get some sort of a cinematic match here, almost akin to like, and I don't remember if they billed it as an unsanctioned match or if it was a street fight, but it was, I think it was Gargano and Cole, Ciampa and Cole. I think it was Ciampa and Cole.
Oh, maybe, yeah, and they filmed it in what appeared to be one of Full Sail's film studios. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something maybe akin to that.
I think there's definitely a possibility for it. If they do that, I mean, Cole and O'Reilly are definitely capable of doing it live, and I wouldn't put it past them to do it live. But I think that we'll see a portion of this happen out in front of the fans, and maybe they'll do a Piper Goldust kind of thing where, I guess Piper Goldust wrestled their way to, and didn't, I was going to say Randy and Bray also, but didn't, I think they did the same thing where it started off cinematic and then made their way to the arena. So I guess the comparison point, as weird as it is, would actually be, did Cameron Grimes and Dexter Lumis start? No, that ended in the arena too. Okay.
Yeah, I guess
as weird as it is, the comparison point would actually be the Firefly Funhouse match with John Cena, where John Cena came out, even though it was all pre-taped, it wasn't live, but this was the portion that was supposed to be like, okay, he's coming out for the match. But then he had to like go through the Firefly Funhouse door or whatever it was. And then it was all silly from there. So I think that's what they would have to do something live and then brawl backstage, get all nastified and then match the costume to come back out and do the finish in front of the crowd again. But I don't know. I feel like if I'm making the call and these guys are the talent involved, you just sanction off the areas where you know they're going to be fighting. The NXT audience, they're especially these loyalists that are getting COVID tested and going and, you know, banging on the plexiglass every single week. They're gonna be good boys and girls and stay put. You know, I would say just do it live.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. It's just something I was thinking about. Cause, you know, it's been a little bit since we've seen a cinematic match in NXT, and I feel like this could be a spot for it. But yeah, you know, by the same token, it's like with these two guys, I think I would rather see it in the ring, see it in the ring live. But with that, I believe that brings us to the end of our NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver preview. So with that, I am Nate Lindberg. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I also write the SmackDown Alt Perspective Report each Friday, which you can check out at pwtorch.com. Tom, who are you?
I am disappointed in DJ from Miami. No, I was looking forward to seeing what he was going to bring to the table. I am at Tom Staup, and with all the other stuff that I have been doing in the build up to TakeOver and WrestleMania for the Torch, I am particularly excited about a movie review that I have coming out in tandem with the audio version of it on the Grit and Glitter podcast that's coming out in a couple days for Luchadoras, which is a documentary about three wrestlers in Juarez, Mexico. And it's about a lot more than that, but that's the basic thing that you need to know. It played the online South by Southwest Film Festival this year, and Harley Padgett interviewed one of the two directors of the film for the upcoming podcast. So I can't wait to hear that interview, and I can't wait for you guys to hear and or read my review of the film itself.
All right, and I definitely will be doing that once it comes out, because that's something I actually want to see. And I haven't been watching a whole heck of a lot of movies lately, so. But with that, guys, this has been another episode of Wrestling Night in America. Greg should be back next week, and we will talk to you on Wednesday. Take care.